The New Testament reading for this morning comes from Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 through 24, and it reads, "You have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, 'You shall not murder,' and 'Whoever murders shall be liable to judgment.' But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say, 'You fool,' you will be liable to the hell of fire. So when you are offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift." There ends the scripture reading. I'd like to invite Bob to come forward and join me here for a dialogue this morning. And I'm glad President Obama responded to our suggestion to talk about Iraq this week, so we have a hot topic. And jokes aside, this past year I have been wrestling with some moral issues pertaining to our nation's wars, and I felt like I could use some helpful insights, especially from a member of Veterans for Peace, an organization that does a lot to put the wars of our country under moral scrutiny. So perhaps you can first tell us who Veterans for Peace is and what the organization's aims are.
Sure, Brooks. Veterans for Peace was established in 1985. It's a national organization that's organized locally. There are chapters in various areas of the country. I think right now there's about probably close to 100 chapters in the country. I could just read the mission statement and that would pretty much lay it out for you. Here it is, the mission statement for Veterans for Peace. "We, having dutifully served our nation, do hereby affirm our greater responsibility to serve the cause of world peace. To this end, we will work with others to increase the public awareness of the cost of war, to restrain our government from intervening in the internal affairs of other nations, to end the arms race and reduce or eventually eliminate nuclear weapons, to seek justice for veterans and the victims of war, and to abolish war as an instrument of national policy. In order to achieve these goals, the members pledge to use nonviolent means and maintain an organization that's democratic and open, with the understanding that all members are trusted to act in the best interest of the group. We urge all people who share this vision to join us." You don't have to be a veteran to be a member of Veterans for Peace. There are a lot of people who are very active in the organization that are associate members, and they are just people who share our vision.
All right, thank you. Thanks, that helps. Now, I don't need to be persuaded that veterans have something to offer, but can you tell us what you think makes the perspective of veterans particularly unique and important?
Yeah. I think what makes the perspective of veterans unique is that, at the very least, they've seen the military culture from the inside. It's not something theoretical or just something a lot of people that have never been in the military are a little confused about, all of the colloquialisms and the abbreviations and everything else. Well, being a veteran, you've pretty much been exposed to the culture of the military and militarism. And then to extend that another step further, if you are a veteran of a war or a combat veteran, you've seen what war is firsthand and directly. And there's really an experience that is traumatic and stressful and horrific can only be experienced firsthand. You know, there's no way that you can explain that kind of a that kind of activity, that kind of experience to someone. You either experience it firsthand or you really can't get a handle on what it's like. And so I think the benefit of a veteran's perspective is that, you know, they can explain to people what it's about without guessing. You know, it's not a theoretical construct. It's actually, you know, burned into your neurons, you know, into your brain, like what it's about.
All right. Thanks. Well, as I mentioned earlier, I was motivated to invite you here today because I've been doing some moral wrestling this past year, really ever since the Iraq war logs came out about a year ago, last October. And, you know, among other things, it detailed the deaths of over 66,000 civilians in Iraq. And the disturbing numbers were also accompanied by a lot of disturbing video footage. And what really kind of shook me was when they showed on the national news the video footage of two helicopter shootings in Iraq. And for those of you who might not remember the details, I'll just summarize it. The first video clip showed two Iraqi men standing with their hands up below a helicopter, and so it's being filmed from this Apache helicopter up above, and it's clear that they're trying to surrender. And so the soldiers in the helicopter radio into the base, and they say, "What should we do? These men have their hands up." And so at the base, a lawyer says, "You know, you can't surrender to an aircraft. Go ahead and kill them." And so then they shoot and they decimate these men. And that was in February of 2007. And then later that year in July, the same exact helicopter unit is hovering over a group of men. And it includes a reporter and a driver from Reuters news agency. And in this instance, the helicopter asked for permission to open fire. And they're given permission, and then they then shoot the men on the ground as they laugh and curse. And so it's all captured on this film, and then a van comes with children inside of it, and then to pick up the wounded, and then they open fire on the van. And so in all, they killed 12 civilians and wounded two children severely. And so when I saw the footage, you know, it just really made real these civilian death tolls that we've been hearing since the beginning of the war. And I found myself really wrestling with the question of who's responsible for these deaths. And so, you know, as someone who's been there on the front lines, what do you say to that question of who's responsible?
Okay, Brooks, that's a multifaceted question. In brief, I would say the entire chain of command is responsible morally. From my own experience in Vietnam, I was a helicopter crewman. Although I was a medic, we were always flying in the midst of a lot of other helicopters, Cobra gunships, etc. We didn't even ask. You know, there was none of this, you know, call back to headquarters for permission. Basically, in my war, it was we had what was called a free fire zone, and if you were a human being who was unfortunate enough to be in the wrong place in a free fire zone, then you could be killed. You could be shot and killed, and we killed a lot of people. the saying back there was, you know, if they're Vietnamese and they're dead, then they're VC. You know, we went by body counts. So and I'm sure that was the experience a lot of these helicopter gunners and armored troops and infantrymen, you know. There are a lot of stories going around, they're killing civilians, but they plant a rifle on them and they'd call them an insurgent. Well, morally speaking, the person who pulled the trigger is morally responsible, even though they're just following orders. You know, they teach you in basic training, it's part of the military code, that, you know, you're not obligated to follow illegal orders. But who's going to parse when you're in an Apache helicopter circling, you know, a fire zone, you know, the troopers probably followed their standard operating procedures. They called back to headquarters, asked for permission to fire on a questionable target, received their permission and opened up. So yes, absolutely, they're morally responsible. You know, if you're talking about morals, there's gray areas, but you know, those troopers are responsible for pulling that trigger. Nobody made them do it. Even though they had permission to fire, they didn't have to fire. You could extend it from there. The pilot that held that aircraft into a circle, you know, if they really had a problem with the morality of what they were doing, they could have pulled out. You know, they could have piloted that aircraft somewhere else. But they held it in a circle right over that fire zone. The people, these lawyers or whoever they were back in headquarters who gave them the order to fire and to kill those people on the ground, they're morally responsible. It goes all the way back to the policy that put the military there in the first place. You could take it all the way back to the Secretary of Defense. They're all guilty, morally, of a crime. So it gets confusing. You know, the civilians look like, you know, it's hard to tell if he's carrying a camera or if he's carrying a B-40 rocket. But it was plain to see that, you know, basically they were just shooting fish in a barrel. And that's what war does to people. It makes them callous, it makes them hard, it makes them cynical, it makes them mean. And that's just an extension of what they were exposed to over a period of time in Iraq. So,
I appreciate your sharing that with us. And I, you know, I realize these are difficult issues to talk about. And I was thinking about that as I was reflecting on our scripture for this morning. To me, the scripture kind of brought up just how hard, you know, moral wrestling can be. And when I first read the scripture, I thought Jesus sounded a little bit overboard, because he's basically saying you'll be hauled before a court, not only for killing somebody, but for simply getting angry or calling them a name. And so I thought, well, anger is a pretty natural reaction in everyday life. You know, it doesn't seem very practical to me. But then I kind of thought about it deeper, and I thought, I think what Jesus is really doing is he's saying in a very polemical way that the sixth commandment, thou shalt not kill, should be taken really seriously. And that one should think about the things that lead to that moment of violence. And so I think for today, when I think about the difficulty of wrestling, it's with these broader policy issues that then follow down the line to that situation of the helicopter shooting those men and children. And I can see how it would be easier to just kind of run away from doing that moral wrestling with those questions and kind of hide in a cocoon. But so I'm wondering, what keeps you going and being able to stick with it and to continually be a part of the activities of Veterans for Peace as we confront these wars that can be quite demoralizing?
Okay, Brooks. Well, first of all, like as a veteran and like a combat veteran, you can't run away from these questions. You're confronted with them every day. And it's been very difficult seeing, you know, the Iraq War and Afghanistan and even the first Gulf War happen, all of these little wars. It just brings up a lot of bad experiences over and over again. And so there really is no respite. There is no getting away from the memories and the moral ambiguities that you had to face, you know, during your time in combat. There was another incident that you didn't mention, and there are incidents like this happening all the time. There may be an incident happening like this. War is an atrocity by definition. So why are people surprised when atrocious things happen? The only thing different about this gunship incident is that people were exposed to it. Folks, don't kid yourself. It's happening every day. That's what war is about. It just happened that this one got out on the internet, okay? And people have been exposed to it. But, I mean, from a veteran's perspective, people are living with this stuff every day. There was another incident up in Tikrit. Nobody even heard about it. Convoy going through the city. People lined up a normal day. Little kid had a lemonade stand set out on the road, okay? Some explosion goes off. Somebody, maybe it was an insurgent, you know, set off a grenade. So the troops on the convoy on the back of a truck with a 50 caliber machine gun, okay, they're stressed. They're on edge, okay? They got a hair trigger. So they open up, they kill the little kid, 8-year-old boy, selling lemonade. Transfer that to your own experience, to your own family. How would you like that? Your 8-year-old kid. Just goes beyond me. I don't know how to say it. But it's going to come back to haunt us. It can't be doing the nation good. There's going to be a point where we experience a collective stress disorder in this country if we keep walking around, you know, gunning people down. Especially in the situation of Iraq, where it was an unjust war to begin with. There was never any reason to invade them. So what keeps me going? I say, look at the children. You know, I have 3 kids of my own. I don't want to hand off this kind of experience to them. It's a little late for that, so look at the grandchildren. But you got to do it for the kids coming up. I mean, you got to look at the world. I mean, what are we afraid of? You know, here we are on this planet. You know, the conditions here, you know, just happen to align to work themselves out to support life on this planet in a huge universe. You know, we should be celebrating and we should be joyful about the diversity in this world. We should be celebrating each other. What are we running around killing each other for? For oil? For geopolitical advantages? Silly. So take the preachings of Jesus to heart. You know, let's all be brothers and sisters.
All right. Well, I think you're in kindred company here. And if I were to try to crystallize some of that for my own life, I would say that in order not to be a deadbeat dad for my new daughter, I need to do what I can to make the world a better place for her.
Absolutely.
So I really appreciate your taking the time to share with us.
Sure.
And you're going to have these available out in the narthex for people to learn about. And I know, Bob, you have to maybe take off for work right away and can't stick around to talk, but we're glad you came here. And let's give Bob a round of applause.
Thank you.